Hello, I'm Joel Miller, professor here at Christian Leaders Institute. Today we're going to be dealing with basic governing, the ABCs of governing a church or our house ministry. Now, when you think in terms of basic leadership wisdom, it says this in Romans 12:8, if it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do so cheerfully. You got a lot of action words in here, but really what it is speaking to is this whole notion of serving and not lording over one another. I mean, Jesus spoke to this when he came down from the Mount of Transfiguration, when Peter had the opportunity to see the veil of Jesus pulled back. They came down from this incredible experience, and what did they do? They walked down right into a mess. And this whole mess, so you had this man, and he brought his demon-possessed son, who's probably running around screaming and acting crazy, and the disciples are trying to rebuke him and cast it out, and it's not working, and Jesus comes, and he takes care of it, and then what happens? The disciples, they go over, and they start fussing and talking about, you know, why couldn't you do it? Because I was sick today. Whatever the reason was, you know, they got into the saying, I'm greater than you. It got into this whole thing of who's the greatest. And Jesus came over and he said, listen, if you want to understand greatness, you need to understand greatness from the standpoint of serving. It is serving. It is from the bottom up. It's the least that is the greatest in the kingdom of God. And so this speaks to that, this whole thing of being generous, this whole thing of being diligent in mercy and grace and doing it cheerfully. And this is in light of the challenges of leading, because if you're leading from a serving standpoint, you must understand it will be a challenge. It will be a joy as well, but it will be a challenge. So when we think in terms of governing, we want to govern diligently. Now, in the house church, you know, the leader who starts the group is the leader. Now, that is true, but with that said, you also have to understand that a person needs to be called into leadership. So, a call to start the group that does not come from himself is very helpful. I mean, even when you think in terms of Paul's life, and here he was on the road to Damascus, and he was knocked off that horse, and Jesus walked up on him and said, listen, why are you persecuting me? And he calls Paul to himself and to ministry, but Paul still went to the apostles, and they affirmed Paul and sent Paul out. And so it is important that we don't have leaders who call themselves and send themselves out, and they're self-proclaiming. They need to be called and sent out. And what this also, I mean, just imagine, you know, when a person gets up to speak and the power of someone explaining to them, this is who this person is, this is who their credentials are, it has greater impact than a person walking up to the podium and saying, okay, I'm about to speak to you, but first let me tell you about myself and how great I am. It doesn't work that way, and it doesn't work that way in the kingdom. We are to walk in context. And actually, when you think in terms of Timothy and Titus, you know, and it talks about the quality of a leader. 90% of them are character qualities. 10% is competencies, apt to teach. But those things are being seen within the context of community, and that is why we do not need to be quick to set the expectations for elders. But we need to mobilize heads of homes to lead in their homes. This is the most important thing, because Scripture speaks to this. If a person doesn't rule their home well, how can they lead the church? And so we want to, you know, encourage people as well as equip them to effectively lead in their home. So when you think in terms of governing diligently, church organization, the theology of leading, that we really are not going to deal with that here. That's going to be dealt with in systematics theology 2. I think you're going to be greatly blessed, and definitely you're going to learn a great deal when you take that course, and it's going to take you through the theology of governing, and I encourage you to sign up for that class. Now, your walk and the office bearer's walk needs to be in unity. So, in essence, what I'm saying is your walk and the office bearer's walk needs to be in unity with God, and you both need to have the same vision of the church. Meaning this, I mean, if you are a topical, you know, communicator, and the person who you're walking with, this office bearer, a potential office bearer, you all might have a lot of things in common and agree on a lot of things, but at the core, if, you know, they desire to have an expository communicator and you're more of a topical communicator, unless that's addressed, and there's going to be problems. Particularly, it's one thing to have a layperson in your church or even in your home group to have differences of that nature, but it's a whole other thing when you have leadership, because they're never really going to be happy with your preaching, and that's always going to be a sore spot. Excuse me. So you want to make sure that you know, you're definitely on the same page as far as vision. You know, you want to be slow to setting up leadership, particularly in a house church, because, you know, if you don't want to have four elders governing four families. That's kind of that's an overkill. So leaders with the gifts and temperament, that's another thing that you want to look at. Does a person have the gifts and the temperaments to lead? Do they have leadership gifts? Are you in meetings and you're talking about oranges and they're talking about, you know, onions? You know, you're talking about bananas and they're talking about trees. You never seem to be on the same page. And so you want to make sure that a person actually has the competencies to lead. What are their track record? You know, is this the first place that they're leading, or is there a track record? And that is so important, the track record, because, you know, I remember a pastor one time told me that, you know, when you're establishing leaders, that you want to look at a person's track record. If you don't look at their track record, you actually, what you're doing is you're judging the person. You're saying, hey, listen, I think they'd be a good leader because they're, you know, a nice person. Well, you're judging them. And to not judge, you need to be able to look at a track record. And part of that is looking at their past and as they are walking in a relationship with you. Also, you need to look at their temperament. You know, are they easily angered? Do they hold grudges? Are they able to ignore a person for, you know, a period of extended period of time? They might have some gifts, but they really don't have the temperament to lead. And finally, you know, just one of the things you may have to deal with is the debate of women in office. I can tell you there are a lot of people who have a lot of passionate views on this. And at the end of the day, really, this is something that you're going to have to deal with in the local context and which you are presently in. Now, we don't feel at CLI it's our responsibility to mandate, a particular view onto people. Now, I will say that we do hold to the whole issue of headship. I mean, we believe there's a biblical precedent for that. But with that said, we also understand that you must deal with that within the context that you are presently in. Now, as a leader, as you are selecting people, one of the things that you must do is prayerfully pursue with the Lord any leaders that you are trying to establish. I remember one time there was a gentleman, just great guy, handsome guy, learned guy, had a master's of divinity, and I wanted to bring him on staff. He attended our church, and every time I tried to bring him on staff, it seemed like he would get called away to another city for his job, and this happened four or five times. He would just be in town for a long time, and then I would try to hire him, and lo and behold, he'd get called away. And I'm like, well, Lord, what's going on? And eventually, I realized that the Lord was protecting me from myself. This guy was not good for our church at any level. So the more I got to know him and I had some intense conversations with this gentleman, I realized that he was not all there. And so the Lord was really protecting me from myself. So as you are prayerfully pursuing a potential leader, you must look at their walk. What does their walk look like as it relates to their family, as it relates to their reputation in the community? You must look at their passion. What are they passionate about? And you can't just impose your passion on them. You need to be able to step back and see what are they passionate about, because you're going to find out sooner or later, and it's better that you find out sooner. You need to understand that you both need to be in agreement to the vision. You need to be in agreement to the vision that the Lord has given you, or the vision that you are facilitating, but that person also needs to be in agreement with the vision. That person has to have, once again, a temperament for leadership and can work with people well and has the mindset of a servant and basically has the gifts and abilities, the competencies to lead. So whether it's governing a new church or a house church, you are the leader first because you're the first called leader, and that's what I mean. And but even though you're the first called leader, it's going to be different depending on what ministry you're involved in. For example, you can be called by an outside group. You might be at the mother church or a larger home group, and they call you to go out and start a new home group, or a church calls you to go out and start a ministry, or you can be called from a group that they're meeting and they decide that they need a leader and they call you in. So a leader, I say this because a leader has been called and commissioned. Primarily, first of all, they've been called by God, but they've also been, God uses his vessels here on earth to affirm that call. And I talked about that even with Paul. Hebrews 5:4 says, no one takes this honor upon himself. He must be called by God just as Aaron was called. And so when you think of a leader, I mean, you want to look at the walk, passion, agreement to the vision, temperament, gifts and abilities, so they can be, you can affirm, not so they can be called, but you can affirm the call that God has placed on their life. For example, we all have been called to ministry, but the question is to what and what capacity of ministry have we been called? And just as you are affirming ministers and elders, you also need to be affirmed. So when you're thinking in terms of ordaining officers, let me just emphasize to you, please, I beg of you, do not be in a hurry. And I know the temptation is there. When you're out in the field and you're trying to make stuff happen and things are becoming arduous and they're difficult, and you, in particularly, if you feel like you might have some potential good people there and you want to put them in an official leadership capacity to keep them there, so they won't leave. If you're thinking that that's the thing that's going to keep them, then you probably need to back up, because that smells like trouble. Because if they're truly committed and are truly servant, it's not this whole notion of them having an official title that is going to keep them there. And if it takes an official title, more than likely they're going to end up being a problem for you. But you want to cultivate leaders to become servant leaders in your prospective ministries. And one of the ways of doing this is by first setting up something I call just an advisory leadership team. And basically what this does is it allows this group of people to work together, and it allows you to put ideas and issues before them and facilitate that and see how they handle that and how they work well with others, and from that then you can begin to make some assessments on how these people will work in your prospective ministries. 1 Timothy 5:22 says, do not be hasty in the laying on hands. And so that's going to change a little bit depending on how you set up that leadership, depending on whether it's an existing ministry or if it's a new church. For an example, if you're setting up elders, one of the things that you need to be thinking in terms of, are there going to be term limits on their serving, or is it going to be lifetime appointments? Meaning, are your elders and your officers, are they going to serve for a certain period of time and then actually come off of actively being on the elder board or the elder commission, or are they going to actually stay on there for a lifetime and just kind of rule until they breathe their last breath? I personally prefer limits, and one of the reasons for that is, one, it just avoids burnout, gives people a chance to breathe and reflect and take sabbaticals, if you will, and to be able to come back refreshed. Also, frankly, if you're dealing with a person who has become difficult and maybe they've become an antagonist in the ministry, you know that by having those term limits that person eventually is going to naturally come off. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be either or, because, you know, even though you may have term limits, you can also, you know, when a person is an elder, they just don't, you know, even though they may be on furlough, if you will, they're still elders. They're just not active on the board of elders. And so, but, you know, obviously that's a decision that you have to make yourself. Thank you so much. I appreciate our time together. Look forward to getting with you again soon. Hope you have a great day. God bless.